Presentation. My name is Ondřej Ševeček. I also try to translate my name into Russian and into Azbuka, but there is a letter that you don't have, so it's there. If you had any questions in the future, just write me an email to ondrej@ševeček.com. I will gladly answer any of your questions, whatever you had on mind. These security things are my primary expertise, and I really enjoy doing security, so just send me an email if you have anything. What is my motivation to talk here about these things is that during several past years I have spent several projects doing security audits, either proactively or after some network intrusions. And I always saw that the real threats to corporate networks are not coming from external attackers, those who are in the internet and who run some automated scripts to attack your outside installations, such as web servers and DMZ servers. But the real attackers your company, they are the people who you meet on corridors, your colleagues, maybe other employees of your companies and enterprises. These have information about the company, about the internal network. They also have at least some level of access to your networks. They have logins and they can access at least something. They can also ask other administrators to help them. So they can lure you administrators into helping them attacking your own network. So the presentation is about me showing you how they can work, how they can elevate their maybe regular user privileges to even domain administrators, and to show you that, or to show you how very easy would be their work if they wanted, if they were just normal users, how easy it would be for them to attack your network and gain step by step gain better and better access and finally hack the whole network of your Active Directory infrastructure, cloud or not cloud. You always have workstations sitting in your premises, and wherever you connect, they can very often, very easily get access. And the presentation should give you some reasons why to secure machines physically, separate administrative accounts and don't use domain administrator accounts everywhere, and be very careful about what accounts you what account passwords you type and use on any machines in your environment. And for example, that passwords are not strong enough and that you should implement smart cards instead, because passwords can be very easily stolen from memories and memory of computers and so on. So I would like to say that I assume that you are IT pro administrators of networks, that you are not hackers, because probably these things would be very basic for the hackers, but you are administrators who want to see how they work and maybe think about how to prevent them. So we will talk about how they get in from the starting point of a regular user perspective, or maybe you have a lot of suppliers to whom you give some level of access to some servers. Maybe they supply you with web information systems, so you make them local administrators on web servers, or maybe on the SharePoint farm, or maybe they provide you with Exchange configuration and support and these things. So they might have some kind of access to some servers. So we start with this and then proceed with the domain administrators. Once they get access to your Active Directory, they may hide inside so that you can't detect them. all the intrusions that I worked on were done very basically, and the attack was very easily detectable, and they were not experienced hackers, and they were not able to hide professionally. If they did so, we wouldn't ever find that the intrusion ever happened. And then if we were able to find the intrusion, if you hack a domain controller, and if you do it not correctly, but if you do it professionally, the environment would have to be completely reinstalled if you want to purge the attack from your Active Directory. So you will see some examples. Maybe it will be a very long demonstration, very quick. I will not go into greater details because I want to show you a lot of tricks. So we start with physical security, because on this every corporate security or data security stands and falls. So what it is? Physical security means that people can access computers, maybe even servers, maybe network cables, and Wi-Fi definitely, and so. So then they can exploit it from this point of view. So maybe have you ever heard or seen hardware keyloggers in action? These are some these small gadgets. You just unplug a keyboard, plug the keylogger inside, and plug the keyboard back again. It's just a hardware which captures electrical signals. They say that it's plug and play on the left, but it's not plug and play. It doesn't install and doesn't need any drivers in the operating system because it's undetectable from software perspective. You just plug it there and it captures keyboard strokes. So consider that you are a regular employee and you want a password of some support account which is administrated on more than a single machine. Then you just unplug your keyboard, plug this back, and do some corruption on your computer, or just complain to the support that something doesn't work. He comes, logs on, and you have his password. So, and very cheap thing, $45 or something like that. Another physical security problem is offline OS modification. This trick is very well known, but I have to show those who didn't see it yet. So what is it? If you are able to reboot a computer to unplug hard drive and modify the hard drive offline in another operating system, or reboot an operating system or computer into another operating system with DVD or flash drive, you can gain local administrator access. I will show you this directly on domain controller, because there are even cases when you deploy domain controllers in small offices around the world and don't give them physical protection at all. So it would look even more severe, but you can definitely, and the employees would do this definitely on their workstations and become just local administrators of their workstations or maybe servers or something like that. So if you have a domain controller or any other machine, and if you reboot it with a Windows installation media, then you give it some seconds to boot. And now Windows installation setup is starting, which provides us with good Windows, very limited Windows operating system called WinPE, which offers command line, Rigidit, and other tools, Notepad, for example. And you can access local hard drive of the computer, but without the normal operating system protection. So we are there in the CD or installation. If you press Shift F10, you start command line. Then you need to find your system disk drive, which will probably not be on C, but the letters don't matter. So E, possibly. Yeah, it's on E. Then you go to Windows, System 32, and you can, for example, steal some data from the disk or replace a system file. Yeah?
Can you repeat what kind of case?
keys, Shift F10?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Shift F10. If you use EFS cannot encrypt system files, but if you used BitLocker, you wouldn't be able to do this if it was encrypted with TPM and the employee didn't know the password for the BitLocker encryption. So yes, BitLocker may be a replacement for physical security. So then I will show this effective attack, but definitely you could be able to replace any system file or modify any system setting in registry. Yeah? So in my case, I copy cmd.exe over utilman.exe, which is utilman is a system file which runs under a local system identity when it is run. And if the system runs utilman, it will now run command line for me. Yeah. So I will reboot to the normal operating system now without DVD. I'm just returning there the original CD. So I will need it shortly. And now, once the system starts utilman, it will start the command line instead. And although this will look very effective, it's no bug from Microsoft side. Yeah, it's a principal problem that I can modify system files or configuration. If it was not possible to do it this simple way, as you will see, it would be possible to install another service or another executable offline and do it similarly. So on the control delete logon page, you can click this ease of access, which is really easy because it starts the command line. And who am I? I'm local system. So now I work as local system. And you can, for example, start computer management console and do any modification to the system from this console, for example, or on domain controllers. You can also start Active Directory, Users and Computers console, and here, whatever you like to do. For example, create a user account. You would be able to do it. Everything logs into event logs as local system operation. So it's even less visible than normally. And you can definitely add them to domain admins, for example. So whatever you do under a local system which trusts itself. Other domain controllers will replicate these changes, and you are domain administrator of the whole domain. And shortly, I will show you that you are also administrator of the whole forest. Because if you look, this is just a subdomain. RU, Russian subdomain in Gopas virtual forest. Yeah, I will show you a picture shortly. So this was another example of physical security, just a very easy method how to become local administrator. So workstations are definitely doomed because you usually don't have BitLocker with TPM on workstations, and the employees will do this immediately after they receive the computer. Another thing would be network captures. If you can bring your own computer to the network, and if you can plug it into a common VLAN, for example, with other machines, you can sniff the network communications. There are some Active Directory communications that are clear text, that use clear text authentication, which is called LDAP SimpleBind. And from my practice, a lot of environments use or authenticate some accesses with LDAP SimpleBind. It's not Windows authentication, but third-party devices such as VPN gateways and VoIP gateways and NAS devices and even VMware console can use LDAP SimpleBind to authenticate users. And often these are administrative accounts because administrators usually connect over VPN or access the consoles and other things. So if you then want to sniff the communication, it would be very easy if you had an appropriate tool, for example. So just briefly, I have a DC, I have a client which will, Windows client, which will simulate the LDAP SimpleBind client. Maybe this would be simulating the VoIP gateway or something. And I have a third computer attached to the common VLAN, maybe not the same switch, just the same VLAN, with a tool for sniffing at the installed. So this is the attacker's computer. And if you have a Kane, for example, Kane is a free hacking tool. Maybe I don't recommend anybody to run this in production environment. Yes, it's a hacking tool, antiviruses detect this. It's just for demonstration. So if you have this, you can go to Sniffer, just configure the capturing and scan MAC addresses of surrounding computers, because I will be doing ARP poisoning attack, which poisons ARP tables in memories of the computers. If you are there, you would go to APR, R poisoning attack. You add the two computers you want to sniff. These are these two IP addresses, 10.11 and 10.10.111. And you just start the sniffing. So it's now telling me that it's poisoning. And after that, when your colleague or where your colleague comes to and connects to the VPN, for example, it would be like this. This is the other client computer, the victim device, for example, the VPN gateway, which tries LDAP SimpleBind. I simulated with LDAP tool, but it's the same as any other LDAP client. And for example, DB admin tries to log on over the VPN device forwards its logon credentials to domain control over SimpleBind. You just click OK. And if it tells you that you were authenticated, you could probably see the password back on the hacker's computer in Kane. It extracted the credentials from the LDAP. So this tells you that everything should be encrypted and that you should restrict LDAP SimpleBind to going over TLS encryption, which is not by default and should be considered as a security measure. But it's usually complicated because the device administrators don't cooperate with you. So if you enforce TLS, the VPNs and NASes will stop working. So it's more complicated to do in the real world than here. So another case would be how to extract some passwords if you are a local administrator of any machine. So we start with some servers. So what if you were administrator of this server GPS data, which runs SQL Server, and the SQL Server runs under domain user identity? This is a common case in networks. Just a limited user account, but maybe the account may have access to other machines and maybe local administrator on other machines, which might be interesting. Or something else, it may have the same password as other service accounts, because the common case for administrators is that they assign the same password to several accounts, and which is very simple to hack then. If you know a single password from the domain, you can try the password against all user accounts. So a very good method, because you don't log the accounts, you just try it once. So no locking, no detection, everything clear. And if there are any other accounts with the same password, you can you have their passwords as well, or the same password as well. So if you can extract the password, you would it would be great. So this password must be stored on the machine locally, permanently in clear or in full. The local system must be able to obtain the full password, because no hash would be sufficient to log on the user normally. So once again, I go to use Kane, and the hacker would just click here, click plus, click next, and see the password here. Yeah, is the name on the left, is the name of the service, and the password, the login you get from the console. So if you are a local administrator, you can obtain the service passwords, because the system must be able to do it itself, so you can hack it. I also have a scheduled task which runs some backup. Task scheduler. You see backup, and it is running under, or it should run under, SRV backup user account, another common case that you have a user account who is local administrator on several servers, and you use this account to backup the servers. Very good. Once again, I'm local administrator of a single computer and get access to other machines. Kane, credential manager plus, and there it is. Yeah. So once again, the system stores the password in a full form. The operation is even more is even easier with IIS, because you don't need Kane for it. IIS is Microsoft Web Server. Okay, so you open it. Microsoft Web Server, and it runs worker processes under, again, often user identities. This is a SharePoint installation, and it has a lot of application pools. The worker processes that run under, or that should run under, domain identities. Often these are local administrators on all the farm servers, and often domain administrators even, because you want to, for example, synchronize user properties from user profiles to Active Directory and back. So the administrators make them very powerful. How to get their passwords? Microsoft gives you built-in tool, so this is no hacking. INET server contains app cmd tool. You type list app pool, the name of the pool, which is, for example, this farm account. SharePoint Central Administration. What? V4 and text do you see it? I not here. Yeah. So IIS must remember the password in the full form to be able to log that user on anytime. So it remembers it, and it also gives you the password if you want. You must be local administrator, but definitely you typed it there previously, so why not give you this password? Say, the passwords are quite vulnerable. With workstations, this work would be more problematic, because you don't usually run service accounts or schedule tasks on workstations. But there are system center tasks, such as operating manager, operation manager, or configuration manager, which may run some monitoring and system administration tasks on the workstations. The difference is that system center does not store the password locally, permanently, on the workstations. Say you need to make do some way else, I will show you with logged on users. Because when a user logs on to a computer interactively, for example here, my machine, this is a workstation, and it is running several users logged on concurrently. In my case, I'm currently Helena. And there is also WKS admin, workstation administrator, maybe some support person who came here to help me somehow. If you are here, when you log on interactively, LSASS system logon process keeps your password in memory since Windows XP. Yeah? So if you have an appropriate tool for that, you can obtain the passwords from memory, the passwords for active logon sessions, which are running here. So if I'm the regular user, I would just invite the support personnel to log on and in the background run something like this and recurrently and just log all passwords that appear in the memory, and I can extract any password. The same case with System Center accounts, because once again, System Center must run the monitoring task, and it will take some time to run. And during that task is running, the password will be in memory. So you can do it recurrently. In order for this to work, you don't even need to be a local administrator. You just need the debug program's user right, because you just need to read the memory of LSASS process. Yes. So one case, even worse case, is remote desktop. Because what if the support person came here over remote desktop to do this, to do his work? Unfortunately, remote desktop is simple authentication, or basic authentication, or how would I say it? In Windows 2003, you saw it. You just typed the password into the remote screen. But with Windows 2008 and the newer clients, you access remote desktops and authenticate or type the password on the client side. If you know the behavior, GPS DS is my terminal server, or any other remote desktop computer, doesn't matter whether it's terminal server or remote desktop. When a user connects to terminal server, Windows shows you this local dialog box, so it may appear like it is secure, but it is not. Say, if Helena is going to remote desktop somewhere, she's there, and the remote desktop connection also tells you about its identity, but it's the identity of the remote server, that it has been authenticated with Kerberos. Once again, it may seem like it's secure, but it is not. This secures only the transport, but the remote server must receive your password in clear, in the full form. Yeah? Over encrypted channel, but in the full form. So, if Helena is connected, and you are unfortunately local administrator of the terminal server, which is my case here. Once again, who am I? I'm just local administrator, not even a domain account. You have a tool, WCE. Once again, you extract the passwords from memory. So the support, if support connects to your hacked workstation, you get his password, which is very good password for even other workstations in your environment. How to prevent this? You need smart cards, because with smart card cannot be copied, and the only thing that can be extracted from memory is PIN to the smart card, but it is for nothing if you don't have the smart card physically. Yeah? So this can be prevented with smart cards. Or, for example, System Center Configuration Manager has the tool called Remote Control Client or something like that. With that, you don't send there the password in clear. You just authenticate with Kerberos, and the agent on the remote workstation does the transfer. So it can be secured, but you need to think about it. So this is password extraction. Other things, how to get access or elevate your access. Would be, for example, misconfigurations or misconceptions and misunderstanding of some basic principles. One of the most common cases recently, a lot of companies are consolidating their environments, and in my country, in Czech Republic, a lot of companies are going to be managed from Germany, And in Germany, there works some wise designer who builds worldwide forests full of domains, say national domains. Yeah. And they think that if you are local, if you are domain administrator of a subdomain, that you cannot get access to other domains as their local administrator. But that's a big misconception, because any domain controller from the same forest replicates configuration partition, and if you modify something wisely in configuration partition, you could get, and it will replicate to, through the whole forest, and you can be whatever you like. So I will show you this case in my environment. I have this setup. Gopas Virtual is the root domain. We have Caesar domain and Russian domain. Gopas Virtual. The Russian domain is the recently hacked domain controller, which I'm the local administrator on it. Yes, and I will try to become local administrator of Caesar domain or even the root domain. Yeah? So how to do it? Just one of unlimited number of examples. Yeah. Say because you are local administrator of the machine. Say, I'm still on the logon screen. Well, that's great, because I do not need to start another command line under system account. Say, if you can run something under system account, or maybe I will show you if you are a local administrator and do it more correctly than. So I'm going to log on correctly as a Russian administrator who is just the local administrator of this domain. So he is domain administrator of this domain. Domain admins, Russia domain admins. Yep. But no GPS domain admins or Caesar domain admins or enterprise admins or anything. So if you are on your machine, you can always start something under system account. There's a tool, PSExec from Microsoft, that can be used for it. It's very useful when you troubleshoot things and do other things. And it's also good for this demonstration. So you can definitely run on something under system account. But I am local administrator. This is a legal or correct operation. Yeah? Because I'm not necessarily hacked that domain controller. Yeah. Say, running something under system account, then you, for example, start group policy management console. If you start GPMC, there are some group policy objects attached to the subdomain, Russian domain, but I will just create a new domain controller, group policy object. Just create it and not link it yet. Say, create, not link, I'm sorry. Create GPO, yeah. Ah, domain controller, sorry. I'm kind of chaotically clicking here. Just group new group policy object without linking it anywhere. New. Rule admin become GPS domain admin, yeah. So probably if you were the hacker, you wouldn't name it this way, but we are not hackers. See, and the group policy object can, for example, have this setting, restricted groups. It's a tool which works even for Windows 2000 and is used for modifying group memberships. And you can add group there and type, select a better domain here, the Gopas Virtual. It will be the root domain. And I select the domain admins from the root domain. Yeah. And tell it that root admin, for example, should be member of the domain admins of GPS domain. Here, I would rather add the original domain admins from the root domain as well, because it might spoil something. So I will put there domain admins from the original root domain as well to keep things running. Because it actually, no, what here? Yeah, you need to specify groups there. And now, so this enforces this membership in the GPS domain admins group. So now, does it enforce anything now? No, because it has not been linked anywhere. If I linked this group policy object to my domain, which I can do normally because I'm local I'm domain administrator of this domain, I wouldn't it wouldn't have any result because these domain controllers don't manage or don't store the group membership for domain admins of the other domain at all. But because I'm local system, there is this sites container. You can show sites. And you might not know it, but you can also apply group policy objects to Active Directory sites. This is configuration partition setting. And if you can do it, normally only enterprise admins can do this. But system, local system of any domain controller can do that as well. So you can apply it to, for example, Praha here, link an existing GPO, and you can link whatever you like. Russian admin should be local admin on the domain controllers. So once this replicates back to any domain controller, all domain controllers in the site, and not only domain controllers, even workstations would apply this. I'm going to make it better to apply only to the root domain. So domain control, only domain controllers from the root domain should apply this object if they are in the Praha site. If they were in other sites, I would just link it to other sites as well. So now it is. The replication should take, in my case, just 15 seconds. So if we update group policy on the root domain controller and check the domain admins membership, it is not there yet. Group policy is not. Not yet. Domain admins to domain controllers.
Push application maybe.
Maybe it's the case, yes. I will try to troubleshoot if we have some time yet. No, it is not visible here, but it might not be. We can try it from Russian DC directly. I'm just doing some troubleshooting here, so you don't bother with these. So I can retarget this console from my local DC to the GPS DC instead. The console is running under Russian administrator, and if I'm able to do anything inside, it would be. No, really, it didn't apply. So, what is the reason? Must have some mistake and somewhere here. GPS domain admins should have GPS domain admins and Roo admin as members. So yeah, I think it's correct. We can try something else. I will put there something like administrators group. I'm doing the same for administrators group. I'm not sure why this didn't work, but am I not stupid? How can I put domain admins into domain admins? Oh. So, my mistake, sorry. The policy probably didn't work because it failed, because I put there just directly domain admins in itself, and it was not possible to do this way. Domain admins, yes. So just two user accounts, and then we go to root DC, replicate manually to be sure, then GP update, and not yet. What now? Not yet. Well, bad case. I'm not able to do it. So we skip this demonstration. I'm not sure what doesn't work here. We can try to troubleshoot after the presentation if you are interested. So that's the case of Forest configuration partition modification. You can install enterprise authorities or modify some property sets or other things in configuration which would replicate. This would definitely work. Another thing is, for example, misunderstanding to Kerberos constraint delegation. What it is, it is a complex thing to explain. So sometimes, say, just take this as a fact. Sometimes you have this setting for some computers or service accounts that you trust these computers for delegation to use any authentication protocol. This is a setting which is necessary for some web applications and maybe other application servers, reporting services, and SharePoint and other things. And the people just tell administrators to put some service types and service and servers into the list, and administrators do this as instructed without asking any questions usually. But it's a severe setting because this way the local administrators of the web front-end server can log any user from the domain without specifying the password at all, and then go with that user to these services. The first service CIFS is SMB. It's another name for SMB, the file share on GPS data, LDAP, I think you understand, and MS SQL is the SQL server in database on GPS data computer. So if this setting is in place, because the application needs to have this, usually nobody understands that what happens. So if you are local administrator of the web front-end server, once again, I will start something under the local system identity. What's the problem? CMD here. So who am I? System. And then if you have an appropriate tool that can do the Kerberos delegation, such as my demonstration tool, you can try it. Maybe a second. What if I'm here logged on as SP admin, yes? Just a normal local administrator. Can I look at GPS data doc shared folder? No, I cannot access it because I don't have permissions to get there to this folder. Yeah. So spadmin is not able to get there. Close. Can system get there? There. GPS data doc. No, because it's access denied. The local system is not allowed to get there as well. But because the local system can log on any user from the domain at its pleasure, such as, for example, Camille, then he can go there under Camille's credentials. True. Yep. This is Kerberos constraint delegation with protocol transition. Some applications need this. Reasons we can discuss after the presentation if anybody is interested. So, but it works like this. Another thing, because I allowed even LDAP access, maybe the web administrators told you that they need the delegation to LDAP because they either think it or want to exploit it somehow. So why not log on domain administrator? We can do it, for example, from PowerShell. Here I am in PowerShell, which is running again under the system account. And if we have a suitable PowerShell script for that, I will just explain the script. It's a function which does the delegation and then opens domain admins group from AD and adds Leos into the Leos user, just a regular user, into domain admins group. Now maybe that will be the problem with my previously created policy, but we can try differently. Where is the... And then if you just paste the script into the virtual machine, it will define the function and we will try it. Definitely you saw the application that logged the user on and displayed the content under that user account. So you can imagine that if you can log on to Active Directory under this account without password, you would be able to write the users to do anything inside. Say become admin. And how does it work? Oh, some errors. We just ignore that. And if I did so, we can check in the domain admins group. And you see that Leos is there. Yep. So I just logged domain administrator for free and did it. Yep. You see the policy didn't apply it. Yep. So, okay. So another method how to elevate. Then, when there are domain administrators somehow, how do they hide inside and prevail in your environment? So for example, they would like to create user accounts. Maybe interesting that you can also create hidden user accounts that you can use to log on, but will not see in the console. Say, for example, they would like to create a hidden account. Oh, sorry, I will disassociate the policy from the site because it might affect the future demonstrations problematically. So if we want to troubleshoot the configuration partition, we can rebuild it. Say, on, for example, DC1, I would like to create a hidden user account. So how to do it? Once again, we will need to run something under system account. But I'm currently hacked in as a domain administrator or local administrator of the computer. Say, if you have a console, you can start DSA MSC console under the system account, and you can also use etc edit MSC under the system account. Here, please note that this full screen console is running under domain administrator, while these two smaller consoles are running under system account. This system, we need to create the account. So I will use just the systems console for it. We need to find a suitable container for that. There's program data Microsoft, for example. Say I first create a container in that location. Program data Microsoft. Some suitable container would be for example, update services. I doubt you would bother with update services container in Active Directory in Microsoft subcontainer at all. So this is a probable hiding place. I will also create a new user account, something like hidden. And I would also like to make this user member of domain administrators, because this is the reason why I create the user account, definitely. So, sure, it is visible. So, if you go to advanced features, program data, and update services, you see hidden. Yeah, you can also, the administrator can also find the user account with some very general LDAP query, for example, object class should be user. This is a filter which finds all user accounts, which is 69 items, and age is not there. It is there. GGG hidden here. Yeah. So normally domain administrators would see it. Yeah, 69 items, but we are going to hide it. How to hide it? You just go to the update services container and click security and change permissions for the container so that not even domain administrators can look inside. Because to log that user on, you only system needs to see that account. So I'm disabling inheritance, for example, and deleting everything except for the system. No, I will have to remove manually. Oh, no problem. No problem yet. Full control to everything. So, okay. So now it's been hidden because domain administrator don't see it. The problem here is he sees unknown update services something. So we can improve this as well. For example, if the hacker wants to play, he can put there domain admins who can not list contents, but read properties and permissions only of the container itself. Yep. Okay. And now, very nice empty update services container, yeah? Say, one thing, another thing, wouldn't it be possible to find that object with the generic LDAP filter? Click 68 items. No hidden. No hidden. Yep. Say, nothing but, yet not. Not ideal, because hidden is visible in the domain admins group, because the group actually points to that account. So this is the setting of the group, not of the user account. But we can also change this as well, because normally groups point to their members, except for primary group, which is set in Active Directory the way that user points to its primary group, while all other groups point to the user account. Say, if I leave him only in domain admins and set it as a primary group, then he would disappear from the domain admins as well. Because now the console cannot enumerate the membership at all because it's pointing from something that it cannot see. Yeah, can I log this user on a workstation? Sure, why not? Because system can read that account. Hidden. Yes. So it's now logging on. Definitely it could be found, but it would be kind of problematic and you need to do some things to find that account and you need to know about the possibility and everything. So he's been logged on. He can normally access machine's GPS. Data doc, for example, if he wants to go there, he can. Yep, under his own account. So be careful. Once they are in, you don't know anything. Or you
find in log.
Yes, in event log there would be system creating the hacker and adding him to domain admins. Yes, this would be one way how to find it. But who reads logs? And another way would be to run the search on the system account and look what you find and compare it with the domain administrator, definitely. But this needs different ways to look at things. Yeah. Another thing, it's a common that you change all passwords after an infection. Yeah. But what? Domain controllers actually receive all password changes in clear. I'm not sure whether you knew this. Usually you think that you change password locally and send only password hash to domain controllers who replicate it. No, domain controllers must control password policies and you also need sometimes to replicate the passwords, the clear passwords, to other connected systems with some identity integration such as to Oracle or other third-party systems. So what if I change a password for some user? Maybe I didn't try it with the hidden account, so I'm going to try it on Camille, for example. So changing password needs this thing. Change a password. Old password is password. The new password will be password with twos at the end. And changed. And but if the hacker knew how to do it and installed a password filter, so-called password filter, this is normally documented feature of domain controllers. You just install a DLL file into domain controllers, which receives all password changes in full and can either decide on quality of the password or forward the passwords to its connected system, such as Novell LDS or something like that, then the password filter will capture the passwords. You need to install it on all domain controllers because it goes in clear only to the first domain controller and from there only password hash replicates. But it definitely captures the password. It's just like just that simple that you install a DLL into System32, which is called somehow, in my case, Ševeček password filter, and you just register it into registry into this key and restart domain controller. Just type there the name of the password filter DLL and restart the domain controller. So you can leave this chore to normal administrators who will start it at the next update cycle.
Sam? If I sniff network,
I'm sorry?
If I sniff network, can I sniff the same password?
No. The password change channel is encrypted with Kerberos key exchange. So the channel is, again, secure the same way as RDP connection is secure. It's encrypted, so you cannot sniff these things from network. But if you hack or infect the endpoints, the terminal server or AD, you will get the password in full. Yeah. So that's the case.
We can install this DLL on any domain controller, and
You would have to install it on all domain controllers, because the password change goes direct in the full form only to your local domain controller, and all the others receive only password hash.
But it push password change to another domain controller.
Only as a replica of the hash of the password. Yeah, sorry, okay. It's not. I'm sorry.
One side.
Yeah, definitely. If you install it on only on a single domain controller, you would capture only some password changes this way. Yeah. See how you limit the scope of say communication and the ability of domain controllers to access other domain controllers' registry and C drive. You might prevent this, but on domain controllers you need to run remote registry because DFS replication requires that. So it must be accessible on all domain controllers. So you can push it definitely. So that's one point here. Because it's a lunch now, as I think, we should end now. So if somebody wants, you can leave now, but can I still continue for 10 minutes? Yeah, so if somebody wants to look at something else, you can stay here. Then we will take the lunch. So this was the password filter. Another thing would be, for example, hidden code, because the hacker would like to plug himself inside and start some, for example, scheduled task, which would make sure he is still domain administrator after you remove something. Normally, you see the hacking tools in Process Explorer and in Task Manager, the two processes that control each other, and you cannot kill the other one. And antivirus software can detect this. And you also have these tools for GPSDC, these tools such as AutoRANs. Do you know it? AutoRANs, which enumerates startup software and a lot of other registry and system configuration places. There is something which is not found here. We'll just delete it. So there are definitely some audit tools that can detect the malicious software, and there are antivirus software and everything. This is very sophisticated, and a lot of auditors uses this for detection of malicious software on computers. But how to hide it, even for example from this software? Definitely, there must be some ways which are not known to this tool, or to any other tool as well. So, for example, it is the case of WMI scheduled tasks. I haven't ever seen a tool that would check this, because nobody knows about that. But it's a common case with System Center. System Center uses it heavily. So, for example, what if you wanted to plan, where I have CRDC, what if you wanted to plan a scheduled task which runs periodically once a month or once several months, and again puts you into domain administrators. So if somebody removes you from domain administrators, this script will run after some time and again gives you the access. Yeah? So, for example, this way. You would just need a script to install it. I will show you this with a GUI tool called WMI Event Registration Tool. Definitely it can be scripted. WMI can be scripted completely. So, This would be simple, like going for a subscription, going for a script in PowerShell or something like that. Then there are two things that you need to configure. First, there is something called consumers, and there is ActiveScript event consumer, which means the script that you want to run at some point in time. The script is here. I need to take the script and copy it into the new instance, name it Hacker tool, for example, the scripting engine will be vbscript. And the nice thing about this method is that it can, it stores the vbscript, which antivirus do not detect at all first. And also the script code is not on directly on disk. It's in WMI database. So it's just built in into the WMI. It's okay. So script consumer has been defined. And then you have to define a filter which will trigger the script at some point in time. So I'm going to create new instance. Once again, trigger at 9 sec, because my script triggers the script to run at every 9th second of every minute. Yeah. And it would be like this. Just once again, don't bother about the code, because it's something complex if you haven't ever scripted with WMI. Also root simv2 here. Okay, then you just connect these two guys, the event filter plus the event consumer, and then we wait for the 9th second, which is 30 seconds to go. And once we are at the 9th second, the script will run and will, for example, write something into C drive. It creates a file in C drive just for the demonstration purpose, but it also writes there the name of user account under which it is running. It runs under system user account because it's running in the WMI service, just under the WMI services identity, which is local system. So once again, if you install this on domain controller or any server, you are at least local or even domain administrator, if you like. So hopefully this demonstration will not be spoiled. Yeah, file is there. And you see that I am system and I will be here forever. Now the file runs every 9 seconds. This is something that would be better detectable than once a month, for example, or something like that. Yeah. So, and you can also attach events such as restart or anything like that. Yeah. So that's it. Yeah, and will authorance see it? Definitely no. So there is nothing like WMI scripts or active script event consumer or anything like that. Yeah. So that's one case. Another thing, this is still script. Sometimes these tools detect, but some tools may probably find the executable or the script on the disk or in the database and may wonder who created the script. For this purpose, applications can be digitally signed. Yeah. And also this tool can determine file signatures. Say, couldn't we sign the sign an executable so that this tool reports that it is correctly signed by Microsoft or any other tool, for example? Yes, we can. So again, another example. I have created fake Microsoft application. We have these four things to copy. And what if you just create a folder? Definitely, it wouldn't be called hacking in real hacking life. And I have this Microsoft fake application. It's just an application that displays a window. But what are its properties? In details, it says that it's from Microsoft operating system. It has operating system version and everything. So it might seem as a Microsoft software at first sight for the auditing tools. So we can try it with authorance. For example, I will register it to run at logon. run. Yeah, this thing, and we put there a hack, and it will be just like hacking Microsoft fake app exe. So what would this auditing tool tell me about the tool at first sight? It's Microsoft Corporation, and it is just I will delete these two nonsenses so that we are not fooled. See, it's clear line. Okay. Auditing tools often have some kind of filtering options to hide Windows entries. This doesn't seem as Windows entry because it's not in System32. So I will just copy it into System32. Put it there and change the path to System32. Okay. What now? It disappeared because it's Microsoft entry. Yeah. But yet the tools usually verify code signatures if it is possible. So when I rescan, then after it rescans, the file is not digitally signed, so it will appear with a red exclamation that it is not signed. But cannot we sign it with something? Yes, we can. I have another version of the tool, which is called signed executable, and it's been signed with a fake certification authority. I just installed the certification authority with correct subject and the name and signed the executable with my own certification authority. So we can try this one. Once again in System32. So what was it? Fake Microsoft. Ah, what is it? Why I cannot see it there? Fake. Oh, sorry, I don't know why.
It's a folder.
Fake. I'm sorry?
It starts from
Microsoft. No.
Microsoft fake.
You Microsoft? Thank you very much. So according to name, Microsoft fake app signed. So we delete the unsigned friend and rename this to be app. And once again, try to check the signature. No, it is still not verified. Why? Because my certification authority is not trusted by the system. But who determines what is trusted on the system? The system itself, definitely. Say, what if you just went into MMC, go for certificates, edit into the console, and add my own root authority, which is just named Microsoft root authority. This is the original Microsoft root authority, expiring 2020. And I will just import there my own authority from the file. Now, can you distinguish? No, except for the expiration date, but do you know the expiration dates of Microsoft fake certification authorities? No. What now? The tool must be restored, probably. Now it's verified. It's not hidden because it's different authority than that one which signs system files. So it's not Windows entry now, but it's definitely it's Microsoft entry, definitely, not just Windows entry now. Here then. Yep. So Definitely, the auditing tools must trust something. So, for example, if you modify trusted CAs, once again, if you hack DCs, you never know what happens. Yeah. So, never assume anything, because everything can be exploited, and be very careful, especially about your internal users, because they are much more powerful than the external script kiddies. Don't let get in. You need to implement physical security, maybe fix this with encryption, such as BitLocker. You need to separate administrator accounts and don't use powerful accounts on compromised workstations, for example. Workstations are doomed, definitely. Everybody can hack them. Yeah. So, don't use passwords if you can. For strong administrative accounts, smart cards are better, because nobody can steal passwords from anywhere. Just pins, and they have no meaning without the card. And you should also think about things that you are doing, that you are configuring, and if somebody wants you to configure something, it might have some security implications that you don't know or didn't know previously, such as the Kerberos authentication without password. Yep. So thank you very much. If you had any questions, I'm here. Or you can write me on the mail.